Good afternoon again. So now we will open the meeting for Civic San Diego regular board meeting of May 22nd, 2019. Roll call, please.
Chair Vasquez, Vice Chair Shaw, Secretary Robinson, Treasurer Kilkenny, and Directors Geisler, Jenkins, and Russell are present. Directors Rath and Avila are excused.
Thank you. Non-agenda public comment?
There are none.
Disclosures, ex parte communications? Director Kilkenny?
I spoke with representatives from item number 6 earlier today about the project, the applicant.
You?
I'm sorry, not number, yep. Sorry, item number 8. Sorry.
Number 8. Is that correct, Director Kilkenny?
Yes, number 8.
Director Shaw?
I too spoke to them.
Okay. Director Jenkins? That's it? All right. Item number 4, potential agenda items. None? Item number 5, corporation report.
Great. We'll make this quick today. Staff during the month of May had meetings with the San Diego Downtown Partnership, as well as the city's deputy chief operating officers. Staff participated in the new market tax credit summit held just last week. On May 16th, Civic San Diego was awarded the project of the year on behalf of the city of San Diego for the Fire Station Number 2 project, which came in $2 million under budget. It is now in line to be considered for the APWA Regional Project of the Year Award. And on May 30th, next week, Civic San Diego will be hosting a Lunch and Learn at the Copley Price YMCA. So we invite the public out to that meeting. That concludes my comments.
Thank you. All right, moving right along to consent agenda.
Chair, do we have any speakers on items 10, 11, or 12?
We have, on 10, we have 11, and we have on 10 and 11. It's, they're both in favor. Mr. Smith?
If everyone supports it, I'd like to make a motion to move 10, 11, and 12 to the consent calendar, unless our speakers would like to speak, and unless anyone has any opposition to that from the board.
Mr. Smith? Thank you. Let it be noted that he has these two in favor on 11 and 10. All right. You second that? Okay. So please vote.
Can everybody please revote?
You ready? No? Yeah. Let's do it orally, please. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? So moved. Thank you. So that's unanimous. So we're moving on to item 8. 7? Okay. I thought that was on consent. Item 7.
All right. Jody, could you put on laptop 1, please?
At last month's board meeting, the board had some questions on affordable housing regulations, and specifically the provision of off-site affordable housing in an off-site location. And so the item was continued, but we said we'd come back with an informational report. And I have Wendy DeWitt and DC Navarrete from the Housing Commission, who actually enforces the regulations. I did want to note, however, that the city has made many amendments over the years to their affordable housing regulations. In 2016, one of those amendments was the allowance for off-site location of affordable housing, both by right and through a discretionary permit process. There's more discussions happening right now, as I'm sure you're aware of, with middle income density bonus provisions, as well as the inclusionary housing ordinance. So those are still in flux. They're going through the city council committees right now. But today we'll just address what regulations are on the board. And with that, I'd like to introduce Wendy DeWitt from the Housing Commission, who can kind of explain how the offsite housing works.
Brad. Thank you, Brad. Wendy DeWitt, Vice President, Real Estate Programs and Special Initiatives for the San Diego Housing Commission. I'll start off with just a few general comments about the requirements of offsite affordable housing. First of all, it is by right. It has to be located within the same community plan area or council district and or council district, or within 1 mile from the market rate project. It is discretionary if the locational criteria are not met. In other words, you could still bring it forward and gain approval under the plan development permit process. As far as requirements, the same number of units and bedroom count. The affordable would have to have a proportional relationship with regard to the bedroom count. That's how we arrive at the number of affordable units for market rate compliance. As far as when do those units have to be delivered, they must be, the affordable housing units must be completed within 54 months of the issuance of the first building permit on the market rate units. If it's an existing structure, then that time frame is shortened to 36 months. And to secure performance, the before the issuance of the first building permit, the Housing Commission enters into an agreement regarding the affordable units and the terms and conditions of those units. A deed of trust is recorded against the offsite property that is enforceable by the Housing Commission through foreclosure rights. If that's not possible, if the deed of trust is not possible, we actually require a performance bond. So that concludes the very general comments, and of course, we're here to answer any questions that the board may have.
Thank you. Any questions from the directors? Director Jenkins?
Thank you, and I appreciate the Housing Commission coming to our meeting today. I appreciate the assistance. My understanding is that the locational criteria includes that the units be dispersed throughout the development, whether it's a new project or an old project, where it's going. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So that, as a practical matter, that means that they can't really be identified separately as specifically low-income housing units. In other words, there's not a wing.
Correct.
Okay. So that's all. I just wanted some clarification to make sure that's my understanding was correct.
Anybody else? All right. Thank you very much.
Great.
Moving on to item 8, Person Beach. We had some questions that were asked on this, and we need somebody's here to address that. Yes, come forward.
Ch-
Chair, just a quick question. I think we remember some of the questions were asked, but could we, if the questions still exist, maybe could those board members that have questions reiterate them?
Sure.
Because I don't know how many questions still exist or not, given the presentation.
I think, Director Russell, you had...
So last time I did have questions, and it was unfortunate I couldn't get them answered previously at the committee. The developer wasn't available to answer them. At the last meeting, I did ask some of those on the record. I've since met with staff. They were answered to my satisfaction. It really dove into the calculations. There's a memo that supports, it, as part of the staff report, that supports the answer, so I feel confident that the data has been provided.
Is there anybody else that had anything on this? Okay, are there any speakers on this today? No? All right, then I guess you guys can sit down.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. So we need a motion to...
Happy to make a motion for approval.
All right, please vote. Again, please vote.
So we will vote orally on item 8. When I call your name, please register your vote. Chair Vasquez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Shaw?
Aye.
Treasurer Kilkenny?
Aye.
Secretary Robinson?
No.
Director Jenkins? Director Geisler?
Yes.
Director Russell? That passes six in favor, one no.
Thank you.
And Director, I will note for the record that this was approval of both design review and the development permits for the project. It is a process 3 application. There is a 10-day appeal period under which an appeal may be filed. And if one is filed, then there will be a new hearing before the Planning Commission for the project.
Thank you. So noted. All right, you guys are making my job real easy today. So we're moving on to item number 9. James?
Yeah, can Connor. I get a laptop one? All right, James Alexander, Associate Planner, Civic San Diego. This is design review for a project known as 777 Beach. It's located in the Cortez neighborhood on the south side of Beach Street between 7th and 8th Avenues. It's a 20,000 square foot site to the north on the same block as the historic El Cortez, which was opened in 1927. A previous project was approved on this site in 2008 by City Council. The project was 12 to 13 stories, averaging 144 feet from average grade. The original project was granted automatic permit extensions through state legislation during the Great Recession. Then after those extensions, it was granted a 3-year extension by Civic San Diego in 2017, which expires in 2020. The currently proposed project is very similar to the previously approved project, but this is an application for a new permit that will supersede the 2008 permit. It is also 12 to 13 stories, measuring 143 feet in height from the site's average grade. There are 104 condo units, but no commercial space. There are 200 parking spaces, of which 53 will be dedicated for exclusive use by the El Cortez residents. The proposed FAR here is 7.2, where the minimum is 5.0 and the base max is 8.0. The project is consistent with the goals and policies of the downtown community plan, including emphasizing the development of Cortez as a primarily residential district. The project is in the Residential Emphasis Land Use District, requires a center city development permit, a plan development permit for 3 deviations from the code, which I'll go over, as well as a map waiver from the City of San Diego, which is being processed concurrently with this project and will ultimately be decided together by a city hearing officer, but that meeting hasn't been scheduled yet. The project was also reviewed by the city's historic resources staff and found it substantially conform to the original 2008 approval and therefore found it consistent with the Secretary of Interior standards. The requested deviations have to do with the street wall. Per code, a 45-foot tall building would be required to be constructed right up to the south property line, which would be 10 feet from the El Cortez building. But with these deviations to reduce the minimum street wall height on the east elevation and eliminate the street wall requirement for a portion of the building on the west elevation, it accommodates a 20 2-foot-wide courtyard, which serves as the residence open space and as important separation and breathing room between the project and the El Cortez. The street wall setback increase that's proposed is for 2 points along the north elevation to accommodate light wells into the pool room. Overall, staff believes that these deviations are minimal and have a positive impact on the project. The project went through preliminary design review in March. It was reviewed by DRC on May 8th, and they voted 2-1 to recommend design review approval with the conditions that the applicant further explores the addition of commercial lease space on the ground floor, makes contact with the El Cortez HOA, and summarizes that correspondence at this meeting. And DRC also requested a memo from Civic San Diego's legal counsel regarding how or if the private settlement agreement between the applicant and El Cortez HOA affects this approval process. Last week, the project was presented to the DCPC, who voted to oppose the project by a 19-5 vote, saying that it's not well-suited for the site. They cited its close proximity to the El Cortez, its height and architecture, the loss of the open deck and pool, and the location of the parking garage exhaust, and then also just other differences between this proposal and the 2008 approved plans. Staff is recommending design review approval and that the board recommends approval of the associated permits to the city hearing officer. We did receive 10 additional public comments after the publication of the staff report that you received, and those have been distributed to you, and then also copies are available in the back of the room. The owner is here for questions, and the architect is here for a short presentation as well.
Does that go automatic onto the...
She'll move it over.
Perfect. We go. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and other Civic Board members, members of the staff, and members of the community and public. I'm Peter Janipal, and I'm the applicant for this 777 Beach project. I don't have any prepared remarks. We have really well-qualified people to make a presentation today, so I'm just going to sit down and take a seat, but I do remain available if you have any questions at all after the presentations. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Riney. I am the lawyer for the applicant, and I've been in contact for about a year now with the folks at the El Cortez Homeowners Association through their lawyers. I wanted to just steal a minute or two from the architects to talk about the project history, because there was a lot of misinformation at the DCPC meeting regarding that history and what happened out there in the past. If you could get that screen up, that'd be great.
It was too good to be true.
I could draw some pictures.
No, I think,
we're okay.
Thank you. Sorry for that, but we'll make it up.
Thank you. I appreciate it. As I mentioned, I'm here to talk about a little bit of the project background. We could click through there, Paul, a couple pages. And just not to lose sight of things, those of you, some of you are old enough like me to have been to the El Cortez before it fell into disrepair in the 70s and 80s. I actually went to my junior prom there. You might remember that in the 80s and 90s, the hotel was about to fall down. I mean, they were actually literally having Navy SEAL training sessions there because it looked like Beirut. And the house, it was full of homeless, and there have been many owners, several sequential owners who floated projects and were unable to deliver because they couldn't figure out how to do it. That changed in the late 90s when Mr. Janipal acquired the block, and if you go to the next page, ultimately restored the El Cortez to its initial glory, and that's a picture of the Dom room after the restoration. You can imagine the kind of effort that went into that. If you go to the next page, Tal. That wasn't done by magic. It was actually done by pretty thoughtful work in close association with the city and the Historical Resources Board. One of the things that was done is that the original 12-parcel lot block was divided into two larger parcels. The back parcel, lot two, which is where the 777 project is set to go forward, was made up of what had been four separate building lots in the past. That was done, if you can, to allow a project to be built on the back side of the El Cortez project. It was specifically determined that the things that had been in those lots were not historic. And at the time it was done, there was an agreement recorded that on both the properties that confirmed that there'd be a project built on parcel two. This is the project that was approved in 2008. It was approved by the City Council, by the Planning Commission, the HRB, the Center City Development Corporation, and SoHo. And if you go to the next page, after that project was approved, the recession intervened, and then the applicant engaged with the community. This is just one excerpt from one email about a conversation with the Cortez Hill Active Residents Group. There were hundreds of emails and scores of meetings. And it starts out with a note, a special thanks for listening to the community and making changes that they asked for. And Mr. Janipal goes on to document the kind of things they're asking for. Those are the changes that have been put into the project, the differences between what was approved in 2008 and what we have here today. And if you go to the next, those changes have been reviewed by the Historical Services Department of the city, who's confirmed that the revised design is substantially consistent with the original design approved in 2008, and therefore consistent with the Secretary of the Interior's standards for the rehabilitation of a historic project. And the HRB signed off on this twice back in the 2008 and then confirming it's still in conformance. Next. This is a letter from the El Cortez HOA that was written back in connection with the 2008 project, affirming their support for it, and also going on to say they've agreed not to object to a height increase of said project to 17 stories in height. Now, we haven't asked for that height increase, but the point of this whole thing, if you can go to the next slide, is that Mr. Janipal, who is the developer who actually saved the El Cortez and knows more about it and cares more about it than anybody, has designed a project that is very, very deferential to the El Cortez. It is the pink box we see here on this screen is the project that could be built with no deviations or variations based upon the building code. It extends all the way back to the property line with the El Cortez. They've not done that here. They don't want to do that here. Instead, they've developed a project, to go to the next screen, that is designed to work with the El Cortez to preserve views to and from the El Cortez. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Tal Softy, the architect, and her colleague, Andre Gomez, to address the specific design issues.
Hello. So I'll start where Mike ended. The main concept of the design of 777 Beach has always been to accommodate the program and preserve views to and from the El Cortez. 777 Beach is similar to the El Cortez with a tower and two wings. And by rotating or having the towers at 45 degrees to each other, we have tried to maximize views, light, and privacy for residents of both buildings as they share the same block. I just wanted to review very quickly the deviations, which James, actually, you really talked about. There seemed to have been some misunderstandings about them at the DCPC meeting. All of the deviations we're asking for are for additional, more additional setbacks, reduced bulk, and bigger separation between our building and 77 and the El Cortez. So it's really been about reducing the impacts of our building to the El Cortez, of 77 Beach to the El Cortez. I'll start by going over the similarities and the differences between the 2008 currently approved plan and our proposed design. As you can see, they look very, very similar. The main difference between the two schemes is that there are 33% more units in our proposed design, and that's really a response to the need for additional housing downtown. We've done this by maintaining the same height between the two buildings. We've increased the square footage of the building by less than 10%. We've accommodated the additional required parking. And then we've made some minor adjustments to the volume of the building to accommodate this program. One that you can see here, which is actually a reduction in height, is the wing, the western wing along Beach, has now been reduced from 7 stories to 5 stories, which we think create a better experience along Beach Street. Other changes you can see on the ground floor plans. On the top plan is the 2008, where most of the, all the space was either commercial or hospitality, with large indoor and outdoor assembly spaces. And, you know, at the time when we were doing this, the El Cortez residents really did not want that kind of assembly spaces near the residential part of the El Cortez. And so when we got back onto the drawing board, we looked at creating all residential units now on the south side facing the El Cortez with small private gardens. And then along Beach, we have live-work lofts that can either be for residences or for retail or commercial if the market needs or requires. So we've kept that very flexible along Beach. But we've definitely responded to what we thought we'd heard in 2008. We've also made accommodations to the volume of the building to accommodate this new program. We've simplified the back of the building, where we've taken the eastern wing and moved it further away from the El Cortez by several feet. We've taken the western wing and moved it forward, so they are now all in a line, which is actually much more feasible and aligns with the grid of the parking garage down below. And then also to accommodate this, the units, we've also increased the tower by 5 feet towards the El Cortez. I'll go very quickly through the plans. You just saw the ground floor plan with the private gardens facing the El Cortez. The lobby is located on the center of Beach Street. It's a big glass lobby that's open and very inviting. There's a big grade difference between 7th and 8th Avenue, a full floor, so that when you go down a level, the building opens up on grade on Beach and 8th. On this level, there's also a pool and a gym, which are open to all of the residents of the El Cortez and of 777. This is the typical base level. There is an amenity space, an indoor and outdoor amenity space on the 6th level. Another one on the 8th level on the eastern wing. This is the typical tower. And this is the single floor of the penthouse on the 12th floor. And on the roof, there's very little exposed mechanical equipment. There are 16 condenser units that are around 3.5 feet tall, and there is a 10-foot screen around the whole roof. Everything else is enclosed. Here's a section of the building showing also the difference in height between 7th and 8th. the four elevations of the building. And then I'll just go over some of the changes we have made to the building since we were at the subcommittee meetings. One thing that we had proposed, I guess, a couple of months ago, were that the two wings be both six stories of the building. And there was concern, because in the original design, the western wing had been five stories closest to the El Cortez. And so we looked at that and felt that that was a great point and also didn't mind the asymmetry. And so went back to the idea of seven stories to the east and five stories to the west, closest to El Cortez. And here's a view showing the two buildings from 8th Avenue. This is from 7th Avenue, showing the space with the private patios in between. Another comment was the desire for more retail space in the building, which is different than before, but things change. Time changes things. And so we looked at mapping the units along beach into live work lofts, which would allow the flexibility to have retail space if there is the market and the need for that. We also included and added doors to all of the units now, so they open up directly to the street. And then on 8th and Beach, where you could, you know, conceivably combine these two units into one space, we also added doors so that there can be one retail space on that corner as well. We had our transformers, when we got to talk to SDG&E further, we could not put our transformers on the El Cortez lot as we had originally planned. And so we've moved them now onto our property along 7th Avenue, very similar to how we had located them on 8th Avenue. They're behind screens and they're not visible from the street. Another issue came up was the exhaust from the garages. We had one that was on 8th Avenue near the transformers at the time that was exhausting outside of towards the street, and that was fine, and we've left that there. We had another one that was exhausting in the middle of the courtyard, and so we have moved that now all the way to 7th Avenue to exhaust in the same way as the one on 8th Avenue. There's been concern regarding the sound, the pollution, and kind of the noise and everything from these exhausts. And I just wanted to clarify that these fans only go on twice a day for 30 minutes in the morning and the evening at peak hours. All the fans are in the garage, so they are really quite quiet. And they actually are lower than the actual OSHA standards of the pollution standards that we're going to be proposing for these exhausts from the garage. With regards to the materials, there was a lot of discussion in the subcommittee about the concrete and the color of the concrete, and we've looked into this further. We're proposing on using a white concrete. It's a type 1L, which is kind of a light creamy color, which is on the sample board behind Brad's head over there. And that will be for the poured-in-place concrete for the two wings of the building. And then for the rest of the building, the slabs, where we were proposing to use just standard concrete, we're looking at using a sealer that looks very much like concrete and would have the same color as concrete and would have the same modeled look. And that also is a sample that is on the sample board there. Then we also have screens and reeded glass for some of the partitions between the units on the terraces, as well as the transformers on the street level. We're also proposing to use clear glass as possible, given Title 24 on the building. And these are just some images of the white concrete that we think would look very nice with the El Cortez, which is also quite white and creamy in color. There was some concern about if we would be able to have the cantilever terraces look as simple and sleek as we were showing them, and so we've kind of dove into the design a little bit further. We don't need sprinklers on the underside. The reach from the wall is far enough, so we wouldn't have to have anything hanging. We're proposing uplighting from the partitions between the units so that the underside of the cantilevers will glow versus having cans that come down on people. And then the biggest thing is that we're looking at suspending these with rods, and did look at another building that has a very similar detail in Vancouver, which you can see the details on the two bottom images. And those rods are virtually invisible from the street. They're very thin, and they allow for that extreme cantilever without any visible supports. And then I'll just go through some of the images of the building going all the way around. This is from Beach, looking on 7th with the El Cortez to the right, and really looking at trying to have the colors feel like they go together. Beach and 7th. 8th and Beach. There's a lobby, which is a tall double height lobby. And a view at night from 8th and Beach, and then the lobby at night as well. Thank you. Okay. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. So we have quite a bit of speakers today. So we have three more in favor. Mike Griffin. Okay, thank you. Andre Gomez.
No comment.
Thank you. And Tal?
Yeah, that's me. We just filled out speaker forms. We didn't know what thank was you. The protocol.
Just wanted to include that for the record.
Sure.
So we do have quite a bit in opposition. And because of time and we're going to be losing some board members, we usually have 3 minutes, but I like to reduce today's to 2 minutes each. We have some that are ceding their time, and I think we can start with that. We have Nassim Herendian ceding their time, Linda Soto, Kathy Casey, Joni Santa Cruz, Brian Bray, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. That's 10 minutes, ceding their time to Ted Shear. Is that correct? And you don't have to use the whole 10 minutes. But welcome.
On? Okay. Hi, I'm Ted Scherer. I'm going to give the same presentation I gave last week to DCPC. I want to thank Ms. Safdie for clarifying, and the dimensions that she just presented are definitely more accurate. So I just wanted to give that disclaimer that some of these dimensions may be a little off, but it's more of a big picture thing. I'm not going to do the whole presentation because some people saw it last week. Just go to the meat of it. I moved in. Let me just do a quick disclosure side. I moved in 2016. I love the El Cortez. I live on the first floor. I thank Peter Janipaul and Anthony Block for rehabbing it. I give them credit for that. We're here to not talk about El Cortez, but 777 Beach. And I'm going to try to be as objective as possible, just comparing the two projects. Obviously, I'm not that objective. I checked off object to the project, right? But I'm going to move forward. To the comparison, so just to review 2008, this is looking from Beach, the north. This is looking from the south. This is the El Cortez side. This is looking from the east. This is 8th Avenue. You could see here that is indeed is 5 feet farther away from El Cortez in the new design. Looking from the west side on 7th Avenue. And this is the ground. So this is the ground floor. I think this is where really the heart of the difference between the two exists. I live over here. All right. So that's, you know, I'm speaking for myself. And I just compared the two projects. Basically, I think 26 more dwelling units in the new project. 19, I counted, so I think it's 19 more with balconies and patios, six fewer commercial units, but I understand now that some of them are work-live, so it's debatable now. Ground floor area is increased by 12,000 square feet, floor area ratios by 0.7. Parking spaces has gone up by 56, the same amount to El Cortez. And then the dimensions, this is where my dimensions are a little off, but essentially it's 7 feet from my door to the property line. And then in the old drawings, you saw it was 31 feet from the offsets from the building on the west side where I live to the property line. You add 7, it's about 38 feet. I call it 40 here. And then a lot of the dimensions, I include the patios because they're an extra 10 feet. So even though the building may be 23 feet away from the property line, if you add the patios, another 10 feet. So if I walk out my door, it's 7 feet to the property line, then 5 feet to the edge of a patio. So the building is much closer on the residential side of El Cortez. I stress that because the Don Room is not residential. That's the east side of El Cortez. The west side of El Cortez, this is where I live. This building is now just kind of creeped up on me. It's more imposing. So I'm going to just compare the two. 2008's up on the upper right-hand quarter, 2019 lower left-hand quadrant. The lower ground level, 2008. The big change is that there's now an indoor pool, like essentially a basement pool. Whereas in the 2008 drawings, it was raised on the west shoulder. Upper ground level, the notable changes are there's no commercial units if you don't consider work-live commercial. Eight residential patios in direct opposition to El Cortez. I know there was a comment today that this was accommodating to requests of El Cortez in the past. And I came in 2016. I would challenge that. I'm not sure if that's true. Garage vents and large transformers positioned at the entrance to El Cortez residential units. When I say the entrance, it's 7 feet away from the door. A pet hygienic area at the doorstep, 7 feet away. And if you include the patios, it's 3.5 feet closer to El Cortez on the Don Room side, even though the building is indeed a little bit further away. But if you include the patios, it's 17 feet closer on my side, and it's 12 feet closer right at the middle. So it's a bigger building. The footprint at this level is bigger, and it continues going up, as you'll see. So if we accelerate up to the west shoulder, this is essentially the level six. You have the outdoor pool in 2008, but you don't have that anymore. And the midsection is 5 feet closer to El Cortez. And then as you go up the tower, level eight to east shoulder, it's roughly the same except for it's 5 feet closer to El Cortez. So this is the penthouse, 5 feet closer to El Cortez. So comparing the two again here, so this is looking from beach, this is the north side. You could see that now, in 2008, it looks like it's symmetrical, but those are balconies on the 7th and 8th floor there. Looking from El Cortez, this is the south side, looking from the south. Looking from 7th Avenue, this is the west side, you can see how it goes straight up here. Here, it leans away from El Cortez. There's more breathing room here. And this is looking from the east side, 8th Avenue. Again, it goes straight up. It's creeping towards El Cortez. So that's that. And I just want to read a prepared statement. Okay, so this attempt to suffocate El Cortez residential units on the west side begs the question, why was this not the footprint to the 2008 proposal? Was the developer more sensitive to the El Cortez homeowners back then? Or did the city not approve the design because of the imposing offsets? In either case, why the change now? Why not enforce the 2008 footprint? A project that was deemed profitable in 2008 is certainly profitable now. The economy is better. Interest rates are less than half what they were then. This project brings with it a lot of baggage. We were ready for the 2008 building. Call it bait and switch. Call it project cheat creep. Choose your cliche, but the situation has become toxic. Directors of Civic San Diego, I implore you to ask yourselves, do you want this tainted project to be the ultimate or penultimate approval in the Civic SD canon? It'll add to your legacy a historical disregard to a site that is near sacred to generations of San Diegans. Thank you.
Thank you. So next we have Jamie Percy. Would you like to speak? You have 2 minutes.
Okay, so I also, I oppose the 77 Beach project, and one thing that affects the residents and owners at El Cortez is the parking. With this project, we're going to lose about 50 spaces underground, which means we will park underneath this building, from how I understand it, and have to go up the elevator, exit this building, take a different key fob, go into our building, and go down to access our garage. And that seems to be completely it's a big giant hassle to even get to the car. And plus, we've got this right in our backyard, and obviously want to maintain the historical integrity of the El Cortez. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ray Mastalish.
Yes, I live at 1441 9th Avenue at the Aria. I'm opposed to this project. Principally, it's a personal issue. We purchased at the Aria with a great view out to the west, above the Holiday Inn Express, all the way out to Point Loma. This building will totally block not only our view, but all of the owners at the Aria in that particular tier. Previously, we owned at the Mills, and we had the historic project there, the Mills House, and we were told that nothing could be done because it was a historically designated building. You couldn't change any plans, you couldn't change the environment around it, etc. So when we moved to the Aria, we assumed that the view we were buying would be protected because it was historically designated. But I guess we were wrong, and I guess you could say buyer beware. My other opposition is the parking. Parking is very difficult on Cortez Hill at this point. This is just going to add another issue to that community. Thank you.
Thank you. McCarthy? Can you state your full name, please?
Good afternoon. My name is William McCarthy. My wife is Ann Burton. I'm speaking for the both of us. We live in the Discovery Building on Cortez Hill, catacorner from the El Cortez. I'd also like to state I am a civil engineer. Now, this we look down from our, we're on the 11th floor of Discovery, and we look right down on the patio and the pool and so forth. Very nice. One of the reasons we bought in there was the view of the El Cortez. Now, I understand with all the development plans going on downtown, there's a lot of them. It seems like every corner there's a parking lot which is going to be turned into a building. So if you rejected every one of these based on the neighbor saying, I just don't want to see that, you wouldn't build anything downtown. So I know just that by itself is not a valid objection. But every site that is built on has to have an appropriate project. Not only a reasonable conformity with the neighborhood, historical preservation, etc., but just the, you know, the bulk of the building, what it'll do to the neighborhood and so forth. And with everything that I can see about this project, every angle that I look at it, every bit of it, this project and this site are completely incompatible. So I would encourage you to reject this application. Thank you.
Thank you. Rita Collier?
Yes. You should not approve the design for this attention-demanding building on this site, nor should you recommend that the city approve the planned development permit because not all the necessary findings for a PDP can be made. A planned development permit is needed for this version of the project because of deviations from three standards. One of the deviations is for a street wall setback to accommodate putting the swimming pool in the basement with north-facing light wells to provide a bit of natural light. A basement is not a desirable location for a San Diego pool, especially a pool that is supposed to be shared with the El Cortez residents. A PDP is supposed to facilitate development that is beneficial to the community, and finding number three requires that it results in a more desirable project than could otherwise be achieved. Another issue that Civic San Diego ignores is fire department access. A fire access plan was submitted to you in the drawings on page 50 and to the city. However, it is unworkable because it uses a version of the plans that had an access gate into the walkway separating the two buildings. Because that access from 7th Avenue has since been blocked by relocated transformers, it is impossible for the fire department to pull hoses between the two buildings should they ever need to. The transformer blockage also led to the request for a street wall deviation. To not consider the fire access plan is a serious flaw in Civic San Diego's design review process, and it is wrong to facilitate a design that won't work in this important way. I've confirmed with the city fire plans officer has not yet received a fire access plan that will work. Therefore, PDP finding that the proposed development will not be detrimental to the public health, safety, and welfare cannot be made. Please do not approve this design. Thank you.
Thank you. And finally, we have Ann Murphy.
Hi there, Ann Murphy. I'm the president of the Cortez Hill Active Residents Group. I've been on the board for 7 years since it was incepted, and I'm here today. I also sit on the DPMG, so I really thank you for your time. I took the time off of work today to be here, and I'm quite glad that I did. I had some objections to the project that I wanted to raise. The key one is the lack of commercial space. We have a lot of businesses on the hill, and I've been there for 10 years, and they have all been there those 10 years and have done very well. They've been very successful, so the lack of any space is very important, the lack of any commercial space. I also want to address what the attorney said about the support from the community, from CHARGE. I was at the January 10th meeting that was referenced, the email that says that there's community support for this and that there were things implemented that we asked for. We made it a unanimous motion at that meeting that we prefer that the property stay as is. But if something must be built, we prefer the original 12-story project as approved, as opposed to any modifications to that plan, which could include a taller project. So we did not support it. We unanimously said we didn't want anything to be built, but if it needed to be built, we thought that it should be the original 2008 version of the plan. The final thing that I want to say is that we had a regular community meeting with 75 people. People in the community are categorically opposed to this, and there's a variety of different reasons, but what was presented at DCPC, I think because it's after work when people can get here, that's what we were able to present the things that mattered the most to the community. The other thing that I learned at that meeting on January the 10th was that there was also a plan that Mr. Janipal had to make it 18 stories and to tear down the Don Room, and he has just recently purchased the Don Room, so I'm kind of concerned about that as well. But in any case, thank you for letting me speak today, and I hope that you oppose this project.
Thank you. And we have Mr. Gary Smith that is neutral. Mr. Smith.
Thank you. Good afternoon, directors. Gary Smith, president of the San Diego Downtown Residents Group. My board thinks that's an excellent building if you dropped it somewhere else. If you're looking for community input, you all have an advisory group, Downtown Community Planning Council, and I urge you to read their objections to this project. They are not recommending this project go forward for specific reasons. Some of those my board agrees with, some of them they don't. We were likewise kind of split. The commercial spaces are a good thing. The fact that they converted three of these units to be live-work spaces to allow the potential, okay, that's fine. Looking at the street wall, having those transformers there is just gross. Not having the street wall, the reason why we have it, if you go back to the design guidelines and look, so it becomes an interesting, comfortable experience along the street as a pedestrian. This is not going to be that way. The last thing I want to bring to your attention is one of the pieces of correspondence that came in today with a report from a geotechnical firm that expressed some skepticism about being able to build a four-story deep building along garage alongside that cast concrete El Cortez. I do not know that this is the stage where that should be considered, but you might want to ask the staff whether that should be resolved before you approve this project and send it forward. It's not an easy decision to make, but you need to look at it and say, is this project something that should go with all the flaws that it has? But to get that answer from the staff would be important, just as you tried at your committee meeting to try and figure out what the terms of that settlement meant in terms of the old building and the new building. So I leave you to your deliberations, and good luck. Thank you.
That concludes our list of speakers. So, the directors. Director Russell.
So I guess I have a number of questions. I think the first one I'm sure Mr. Janipal would want to answer with regards to your desire to buy and destroy the Don Room. Would you like to speak to that statement that was made?
That's just thank you for bringing that up. That's an excellent question. That's just an extraordinary, kindly put, as kindly as I can say it. It's an extraordinary version. First of all, the reason I brought an 18-story building forward was to build an affordable housing project on the site. And in order to make that work, in order to build affordable housing on site without buying affordable units off site, was that the building needed to fill up the entire envelope. And we were encouraged to bring that back by members of the city council. Let's have a look, see if affordable housing will work there. It was met with considerable resistance, so I dropped that without taking it to even a second meeting. The business about the Don Room is just extraordinary. You know, you should have seen the building when we first visited it in 1991. A little boy came up on his bicycle and offered to show us the bones of the dead guy in the bottom of the elevator shaft. There were posters and spray paint inside, homeless people all the way through. I think you saw the photograph of the restored Don Room. Part of the process following the 2017 meeting, which we were encouraged by board members, maybe some of you were there, I'm sorry, I cannot recall exactly who it was, please get together with the community members and talk to them about some of their objections. So it's like upside down world. In 2017, they didn't want any retail. There was too much retail, there was too much community space, there was a giant ballroom, we were gonna build another ballroom, and there was gonna be open space for the parties and weddings between the buildings. We couldn't just change that without permission. We had to stop what we were doing, completely redesign the building, and bring back this application today so that on the ground floor there's no commercial spaces that will have public giant numbers of public people. Right now we'd have up to 1,000 people at events there. Now there'll be zero events there, and that's entirely consistent with what the HOA and the board members of Cortez have told us, and that's consistent with what the community group told us in 2007. You'll have your chance. 2017. The only reason we stopped and redesigned it was that was the direction. So today they're going to use that flexibility to try and slay this project, and I encourage you to listen to really, really the true story of what happened there. I bought the Don Room. I closed on it about a week ago. It's not a cheap purchase. I bought it in order to take it out of circulation, as I promised to do, so that there wouldn't be any more weddings, banquets, or other parties that seem to bother people late into the night. It exacerbates the parking problems there. If I buy the Don Room, then the Don Room can become a common area or it can become a meeting space. It can become any number of different things, but it will no longer, I can assure you, be a ballroom where weddings and loud parties go on late into the night. I also took out 15,000 square feet of ballroom space in the 2017 version, again, at the request of community groups. And I have hundreds of emails going back and forth between the HOA of the El Cortez and members of this very group. So for them to turn it upside down today and use that against us, it's just, it's fundamentally unfair. Thank you for the question.
Excuse me. I'm gonna ask you, if we ask more questions, please address us over here and wait until we finish with the director so we can have others.
No, I think no. You answered the question. There was a statement made about destroying the Don Room as part of this, and I wanted clarity on that.
Anything else, Mr. Russell?
I'm curious about parking requirements. What are the parking requirements for the project, and what is being provided? There's a complex formula here, I believe, because you're replacing existing parking on the site. Is that correct?
We were replacing the parking of the El Cortez that we're destroying, so to say, and putting it in our building, and then we're also accommodating all the required parking for our project. And that was part of the agreement, the original agreement between the, I mean, I should kind of say that too, but yeah, so that's, we are accommodating whatever we said we were going to accommodate with regards to the parking spaces that are being misplaced by our building.
Okay.
And just to clarify, there actually is no required parking for the residential building. Under the new provisions of the parking code. Yes. Yeah, there are new parking regulations.
Okay.
And what is the parking ratio that you're providing them? Because I recognize that it was zero. That's what it said in the report. That's why I'm asking this question. What is the ratio that you're ultimately providing?
We have about 200 parking spaces, and we have 104 units, so 2-to-1. Okay. If you're including El Cortez. If you're excluding El Cortez, it's about 1.5.
Right.
Okay. And then fire department access, there was questions raised about the fire department access. Presumably that's going to be addressed by the fire marshal in the submittal process, but is there any comment with regards to the access issue?
The project's going through the typical city review of all the departments, and they will need to sign off on all the appropriate plans and permits, so we have full confidence that will be addressed.
Okay. And there was a question last time about council. We've been provided with a note from council about the nature of the agreement and potential conflict there. Can you reference that? Speak to that.
Sure. We, at the committee meeting, the agreement came up, and I provided the opinion to the committee that Civic and the city are not a party to that, and therefore it doesn't constrain your authority. I've done additional analysis and confirmed my opinion as previously stated.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate having that on the record. I don't want to take up all the time here, but I guess what I'd like to say is that I think that the questions that we're being asked here, the authority of Civic is surprisingly limited, notwithstanding what you might read in the press sometimes in terms of what powers we have. We have very limited questions upon which to base our decisions, and I think that the findings we have to make are consistent with the design guidelines from downtown. I would have to answer in the affirmative in all of these cases, and so are you entertaining motions yet?
You're free to do that.
Okay. Thank you. I look closely at this. I mean, and I'll tell you the things that I look at is, are we, in fact, consistent with the Historic Resources Board? Are we consistent with the downtown community plan? The setbacks that are being requested, the deviations, are actually to increase the space. In fact, actually, I do have another question from the architect. I'm very unclear. I believe that there was an increase in the amount of space between the two buildings from the 08 to the current plan. Is that?
And there is an increase of space between on the east side and a decrease of space on the west side.
So they were aligned.
So we basically aligned the two and just lined them up.
Okay. Can you show us again on the floor plan where that is?
Yes.
Okay.
Trying to remember. here. So you can see the two dimensions there to the property line. It's from the building to the property line. We did not include the patios. The patios we think are a nice amenity to be looking at. They're green patios or, you know, their outdoor spaces. So up on, you could see that it was 31 and 16 in 2008, and it's 22, 22, 9 on in 2019. So we just kind of cleaned up and went in the middle.
Okay. Okay.
Can you go forward one slide, Tal? And so, just for reference, so dimension to El Cortez then is 33 on the west and then about 50 foot six at the center line.
Okay. And the total number of units again in the is 104, correct?
That's correct.
So if we were applying inclusionary, it would be about 11 units rounded up that would be required to be provided. I just want to note that the in lieu fee that's being proposed, it's referenced in the report two different amounts, 1.6 million or 1.562. These are estimates I recognize, so I just want to point that out. But at either of those numbers, that would generate at traditional leveraged amounts about 12.52 units. And whereas some would argue that we should be building on site, the net yield of affordable units is pretty comparable to what would be required by on-site inclusionary housing, and that's an important measure for me. All of these things, the issues that we're asked to respond to here, I would say that I would have to find in favor of the application, and I would move that we support the permits proposed by staff here today. That would be my motion.
Thank you, Director Russell. Director Jenkins.
Well, thank you. I have a series of questions. And let me begin by noting that one of the public comments written to us raises the question of the authority of Civic San Diego to make a decision in this case in light of some proposed changes to its authority on regarding downtown permits. And I guess I would just appreciate our legal counsel giving us a determination as to whether we can proceed on this in light of that question being raised.
Thank you, Director. Yes, the current plan district ordinances that govern this question empower and require that this board make the design review determination. There are some announced plans to change those PDOs, and that may go forward in the future, and your authority may be different in the future, but we're dealing with what is in place right now, and currently this board is the design review entity and charged with that obligation and has to perform that obligation.
Thank you, Mr. Haggerty. Appreciate that. So to get into some of the detailed questions, again, the answer to this may be similar to the question that Director Russell raised about fire department access, but a number of the comments that we received raise a question regarding seismic integrity and the ability to do the excavations necessary for the underground parking. And if it's a process question, maybe Mr. Richter, you could comment on that. If you've already gone through that process and have an evaluation, then maybe the architect could respond.
There haven't been detailed structural and excavation plans prepared at this point. This is basic concept drawing stage and permit entitlement stage. They will, when they go forward with the proposed construction, prepare detailed construction drawings, including structural calculations, structural plans, excavation plans, shoring plans, all have to be signed off by the appropriate professional disciplines and reviewed by city staff. I will note that significant underground excavation occurs a lot downtown, obviously. I recall when the Discovery Project catacorner to this project was built, it was built about 5 to 10 feet away from existing older apartment buildings, and that excavation was over, I think, 60 feet deep. at some location similar to the 11th and Broadway project currently under construction down the block here. So this is not atypical. This is unique in some certain sense, of course, because the historic building next door, the building is set back from there. And so their plans will have to accommodate all of those unique circumstances of this particular property. But underground garage construction, shoring, et cetera, is very typical of construction downtown.
Okay. Anything you'd care to add to that?
Yes. I mean, our preliminary design right now with structural engineers and geotechnical don't foresee any big issues. But as we move the project forward, we'll be addressing anything that we discover, you know, in terms of geotechnical reports. But we have not seen anything that would alarm us at this point with the soil conditions or anything like that.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry to go through these one by one, but I want to get to the issues that were raised in the correspondence we received and the comments that we received. One of the questions that was raised pertained to whether the assessments for the El Cortez residents for parking and use of the pool would change, or whether that would remain the same as it currently is, or whether that's been decided.
I can address that.
As I mentioned, Mike Riney and I've been in contact with the HOA's lawyer.
Can you state your name again for
Michael
the record?
Riney, yeah. Talking about these very issues. We don't have a budget for the cost of maintaining the pool because we're not that far down the road, but there's an agreement in place with respect to the HOA at El Cortez paying a proportionate share. I don't recall the exact wording, but there's a definition in there as to how it would be that cost of just maintaining the pool would be allocated between the two parcels. Basically, in exchange for getting access to it, they pay a proportionate share of the maintenance cost for the pool.
How does that compare to what they're paying currently?
I can't tell you what the budget is. That's beyond my bailiwick. But I know that they're anxious, very anxious from a budgeting perspective to get this project built, because what they're hoping to achieve is to get the parking next door that would hopefully allow them to cut back or eliminate their very expensive valet parking they're using right now. And that's part of the whole conversation we've had. I'm not privy to their internal discussions, but I know the lawyer and I have been having lots of conversations about that sort of stuff.
So that's something you're working on?
It is something that we're trying to work with the HOA to work out.
And maybe you can answer this follow-up question. One of the speakers raised concerns about access to parking. Anything that you can add to that or respond?
Well, there are thoroughfares. I think Tal can lay them out for you, but there are passageways across the properties are designed to allow the El Cortez people to exit their building, enter the backside of the 777 project, and then go down to the
come through
underground parking garage there.
They'd be able to come up the elevator and right through to the building.
Okay. So I guess I just have one more question, and that is Mr. Alexander, you raised this before, and maybe you can elaborate just a little bit. What is the appeal process to our decision today?
Well, for this project, actually, this is just design review approval. The development permit itself is being combined with a map waiver that's being processed concurrently through the City of San Diego. So the city is finishing up their internal review, and when they're done with that, they'll schedule that hearing officer meeting, and that decision is appealable to the Planning Commission.
To the Planning Commission,
right.
Then. Okay. Thank you very much for clarifying that. So I guess where I am on this is similar to Director Russell, that I think we have a limited range of decisions to make. And I have no background or knowledge to make any decisions regarding architectural appropriateness of this project. I think that all of the standards are met, and for us to make a decision today, and accordingly, I will second the motion that Director Russell made to approve this project.
Thank you, Director Jenkins. Director Robinson.
Thanks, Chairman. It seems to be a lot of loose ends to this project on approval, specifically with that report downtown that you're speaking about, Brad, where the cycle report is being signed off on, where people's checking the box. So it's not, it sounds to me as that the boxes hasn't been checked yet on any of this stuff.
The level of information in the plans and the permits and the conditions that will be placed on development permits are no different than any other development downtown. There's always, you don't have all the information, the technical information. That's what building plan check is for and construction permits are. The level of information provided here and is required by the city before it goes to its public hearing is the same for any other project downtown.
I get that, but I guess you didn't answer my question. It's just I don't see anyone committing to signing off anything yet at this point, according to what you said earlier, but I guess not. And I guess there's something that I'm missing around this, but I do know that things have to be signed off before the permit is given. And I'm having trouble, and I'm having trouble about the fire plan. Waiting on somebody to come along and say that they're going to submit a plan, but you're asking me to vote.
Again, the action before you today is design review of the project. The technical plans that fire marshal reviews and clears before it goes to any public hearing or for the actual permits for the project. Now, in reference specifically to the fire plan and fire hoses being brought through the courtyard, I'm not familiar with that. That sounds very, very unique since most buildings are built property line to property line and building wall to building wall. So typically any fire access or anything are through the main lobby of a building and access are not through courtyards because typically courtyards don't exist downtown. So I'm no expertise on the fire plan. That's why we have the fire plan review checkers that must sign off on the project before it goes to a public hearing.
No, I understand that, but it's just a little integrity thing for me and about somebody getting trapped. Somebody say, okay, we'll approve it, and I'm not there when they approve it, and it might not meet muster. So, you know, and then the other thing is for staff, I guess for Sean, I know that we had a conversation about this an agreement, but I know that this agreement, some information about the agreement and about what we should or should not do came out after our conversation yesterday. This document that we got today around the Bax and Moussa matter, and that we shouldn't participate in it. It sounds like the group wants to do some litigation if it's not approved, or they want to move forward on that. So I know that I was told that it might not affect us, but if it get in the courts, then it will affect us. Somebody's going to bring us up. So I'm a little troubled by that. Maybe you can kind of clear that up and help me understand that, because we're talking about Civic here.
I don't have much to add beyond my opinions that I've already expressed. I mean, if you're speaking to the settlement agreement, Civic's not a party to it. The city's not a party to it.
I'm speaking to this document that's laid out in front of us that was sent yesterday, and it at 2:35.
Yes, and then I think that was my opinion that I expressed to the board through the question asked by Director Jenkins, that you know that allegation has arisen on other projects as well. Regarding the proposed changes to the PDO and whether those proposed changes have any immediate effect on Civic's authority, and they don't. I mean, the law is currently how it is, and people are going to express whatever opinions they want to express about whether you should do it, but you're legally obligated to conduct a design review. That's what the PDO says.
No, I get it, but I just want to try to look at the protection of Civic, and if we can be ready for whatever needs to happen. And it's clear in my mind what we're doing here from a legal perspective, so that's why I raise it again. Because I got this after we talked.
Yes.
And I might be off point here, but I got a little history here knowing about legal actions, you know, because it's one of them in here. But I do have a question for Mr. Smith. Gary Smith,
Gary Smith, president of the Downtown Residents Group.
You mentioned earlier about a document that your group had written about things that they approved or they didn't like about the project.
Correct. Those comments are also reflected in the DCPC report. They're the same comments.
Okay. Okay. I thought it was different.
No.
All right. Thank you, Gary.
Director Shaw. I'm sorry, Director Robinson. Okay. Director Shaw?
Thank you. Just a couple points of clarification. Mr. Richter, after the action here, should the project be approved by the hearing officer or eventually the planning commission, this project would have to go through and get a building permit through the development services?
Absolutely.
And as part of that, do they need to demonstrate compliance with the geologic standards of the city geologist?
Absolutely.
And that's their written report?
Yes.
And as part of their plan check review, the fire marshal reviews those plans?
Yes.
So irrespective of what happens today, that could change the design should something come up during plan check.
Yeah, and just for instance, these are basic concept drawings. Detailed construction drawings always vary a little bit, and that's why the detailed construction plans are reviewed by the applicable departments and the experts over the city.
And should that design, should something in the plan check cause the design to change, wouldn't that return for review at a certain point?
Not necessarily, unless it was significant. And in fact, with the proposed PDO changes and the elimination of the design review process, there's question whether anything would come back, but certainly not minor changes would not come back.
Right. So if they had to reroute the fire access in a different way or observe a larger setback, that might trigger additional review.
Could.
Good. Great. Thank you. I'm comfortable with the project. I appreciate that people have wants, needs, and there's some history between the different parties, but the project is largely consistent with what was approved in 2008. And I'm prepared to move forward.
Thank you. Director Geisler.
Thank you. Brad, it's not typical that we see a 19-5 vote from DCPC against something we're proposing or you're proposing as staff, because you guys are usually pretty simpatico on those. So why do you think this one's gone that way for them? And I ask the question because we sit on this board and we make some of these judgment calls. You know, I don't live downtown. I rely on a lot of the downtown residents to give me the feedback on what they need and want to see and how everything should flow and so on. So mm-hmm. What are your thoughts just on that question?
It's hard for me to conjecture because it is kind of rare that we have an opposition vote like that. I think it was summarized well by James that people weren't comfortable. They liked the historic setting. They liked the current setting of the building. I will note that there was a 7-story building on this block for about 45 years until 1998 or 99 when it was demolished. And so I think it would just the community input, the uncertainty. We have a lot of new members mm-hmm. in the last 2 years on the DCPC. So I'm not quite sure, but I think the issues that James summarized in his presentation were a good summary of those feelings.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. And again, it's a kind of a unique one. And I know why, because, you know, the El Cortez is one of the jewels of downtown and we want to try and protect it. And we also want to be considerate of being consistent with design guidelines and parameters. So I'll be considering that on the vote. So thank you.
Thank you. So that's the conclusion of our directors. I think they all spoke. And I usually don't speak, but today I'm going to. It's one of the things that has troubled me throughout the years that I've been here on this board is that we're giving too much credit for the things that we can and cannot do. And this is a perfect example of our limitations and our scope of what we can determine. And as stated here before, you know, pointed out by Director Shaw also and some of the other members here, this isn't the final vote. This has to go back to higher power to decide if this is going to go through or not. What we're tasked for is if we feel comfortable with the design that is presented here today, and I think that overall most of us are. I understand community members and their strong feelings about where they live. I'd like to add that back in the 60s, my dad worked at the El Cortez Hotel as a busboy on that restaurant there. And it's ironic that I'm sitting here today and affecting something that affects this building. But again, our duties is to approve the design and if we feel comfortable with that, and that's it. And once we do that, yay or nay, then it still goes to other powers that have to really look at the project for the fire, for the structure, for the all the other stuff that is important. And if none of that meets the criteria or what needs to happen, it's not going to go through. So I feel for the residents. I understand, you know, how passionate it is. It's, you know, that's where you live. But again, that's what we're faced with here today, and I'm also prepared to support this project. So having said that, we have a first and a second. I'm going to ask you to vote, please.
Okay, let's try an oral vote, please. Chair Vasquez?
Yes.
Vice Chair Shaw?
Yes.
Secretary Robinson?
No.
Director Jenkins?
Yes.
Director Russell?
Aye.
Director Geisler?
Yes.
The motion passes 5-1.
Thank you, and I think that concludes our meeting. Meeting is adjourned. We'll see.
For sure, if you get a chance.
That one, that was the approval today.